Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
All right, first half of the show, I float an idea that I find interesting, except for I'm the only one who finds it interesting. So you guys can decide whether it's an interesting thought or not. Actually, that's the second half of the show, too. But we'll talk about mentorship and just what a big deal that is. And first, I'll tell you about Bet Online. The wait, finally over. Football's back. Yeah, you want to get in on this? Might I suggest Bet Online? Get in on some of that action. This Sunday, we got Falcons and Cowboys. I happen to like the Cowboys in that combination. Bills, Dolphins, Rams, Eagles. Oh, who knows with the Rams and the Eagles. But the Patriots and the Seahawks. I think the Seahawks are good, man. Got more options to wager than any other place online. You can do spreads. You can do totals. You can do props as well. There's a lot of season opening bonuses to get in on, division championship futures as well. So what do? Head to Bet Online today. Take advantage of all the great sign-up bonuses, and it's easy. Just go to betonline.ag, our exclusive partner, Podcast One. Don't forget, promo code Podcast One for your sign-up bonus today. Bet Online, your online sportsbook experts.
Just $25, you get wine and gifts. Ace's favorite stuff or products from ACS. Every single month, you get the drink you choose. It's hard to beat cool stuff and booze. Adam's Monthly Nut. Adam's Monthly Nut.
You heard Dick. It's time for another ballsy month of Adam's Monthly Nut. This month includes two Vinny Tortorich approved and invented ultra fat instant energy packs so you don't reach for that donut. Four shot glass ice molds so you can keep your whiskey cold and straight down the hatch. A bottle of Chateau Spill to remove wine stains or blood from the fine silk you're donning. Of course, a bottle of your choice. And the coup de grace, a digital download of the very first basic cable commentary, Roadhouse. This $60 value can be yours for only $25 at CorollaDrinks.com. From Corolla One Studios in Glendale, California, and brought to you by Bet Online, this is the Adam Carolla Show. Adam's guest today, the co-authors of Mentor to Millions, entrepreneurs Mark Tim and Kevin Harrington. With Gina Grad on news, Balt Bryan on sound effects, and Jeff Cesario with the sports, and now, following the science to flatten the curve, Adam Carolla.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get it on. No choice but to get on and mandate you get it on. Thanks for tuning in, and thanks for telling a friend. We love that about you. Right, Gina Grad?
That's right.
And Ball Brian?
Window of Negligence.
Yes, the porcelain punisher has spoken. All right, I came across something I recorded from watching ESPN the other day, and I've long said that the women playing tennis actually grunted louder. You know, the 130-pound women grunted louder than the 330-pound strong men grunt when they lift the keg and, like, throw it over their shoulder.
Absolutely.
And, I mean, seriously, when you watch the strongman competition and the mountain shows up and there's a keg filled with cement and he has to, like, throw it over his back to try to clear an 18-foot crossbar, that guy's grunt at 365 pounds is quieter than the 125-pound Yugoslavian chick returning serving a serve in the middle of the match, in the middle of the day, in the middle of anything. You know what I mean? So I was listening, and I was listening to Venus Williams, I think. Or was it Serena? It was Venus. Venus Williams and Victoria Azarenka or whatever. She was in there. There was like the semifinals. I think she beat Venus.
It was Serena.
Oh, sorry, Serena. She beat Serena and then lost later on. But anyway, I just happened to be watching this great volley, and I thought I'd record it because of the grunting. But there's a new thing that athletes are doing that are driving me, it's now driving me insane.
Actually, Adam, it was Venus Star, correction.
Thank you. That's producing, my friend.
She played both of them, and we said Serena before the show, so that's why.
Anyway, they're grunting. But there's a thing that athletes are doing all over the place now, especially the NFL and NBA, and it's driving me insane, and now women's tennis are doing it too. So you can listen to the volley, and then listen for the end.
Second serve here.
Everyone does thing, you know, when they sack
the person.
Yes.
Sorry, does the person who lose get dragged into the fiery pits of hellfire? What was it? Was like,
no, everyone does. Whenever anyone sacks a quarterback now, they do the, they do this.
Are you just noticing it more because of the lack of fans? Because the NBA has been, you know, slamming their guy's face, you know, that whole thing for what feels like years. But are you noticing it more now?
Well, first off, I never saw it in female tennis before. I've never. And also in female tennis, they're quiet, you know, normally when they're playing. So you always hear the grunts. But I'll play it one more time. You'll hear the end is Venus or Serena. My brain will never sort them out now. But
say Williams,
the larger one of the two. One of them's got a Venus. Oh, who cares? Serena. Yeah, wait a minute. It's the bigger one. Who's the bigger one?
I don't know.
No. Okay. I'm swimming now. Serena's? No, Venus. Venus.
One's taller, noticeably I bigger?
I always thought Venus was taller. Like, noticeably.
But you know, one of them's bigger.
No.
No?
I don't know.
No, but Serena's built like a brick shithouse.
Right. So all right. Then it's Serena. Right.
Jesus.
One of them's built like a brick shithouse, and the other one's sort of normal. Looking, all right, a little more average, right?
I do believe I'm not a huge women's tennis fan. Yeah, I think Serena's more muscular.
All right, shouldn't take
in
that.
The picture I'm showing you, Adam, Venus is on your left.
This is no help. One of them in, thank you. One of them in their tennis outfit looks like a fucking monster. I mean, strong and big muscles there, and the other one looks a little more like the average woman on the circuit. So you can figure that one out.
I think Serena is the more muscular.
Venus is 4 pounds heavier than Serena.
No help.
And three inches taller.
Serena's the one who's built more.
You see the right? You see when you see the right picture of her in her tennis outfit, you go, "My God, she!" All right, forget it. It's one of the chicks. Find a fucking picture that's normal. Find them playing tennis, and then we'll see which one's which. It's easy. All right, it's
just
on there.
Type in Venus and Serena Williams into Google. The second picture really illustrates the difference.
All right, so anyway, but I'm glad you have them on the red carpet wearing shawls. All right, here we go.
Second serve here.
Yeah. So that's her winning. That's the sound you make when you win. Now, what I'm saying is athletes didn't used to celebrate that much when they sacked somebody or scored a touchdown or, you know, one volley in a tennis match. But now there's a better example. Find a better example of her in her tennis outfit. She's bursting out of her tennis outfit. Her guns are bigger than Steve Austin's. Just find that fucking picture. Over the place. You'll send it to it. There's pictures of her looking as buff and as strong and as freaking nature-y as humanly possible in the little tennis outfit. That's what I'm saying. All right. So anyway, no. She's 19 and a half there. Just find her in a tennis outfit.
Playing tennis.
Sorry. I'm being unclear. Find a picture of her playing tennis in a tennis outfit.
Okay.
All right. Sorry. I was dancing around what I wanted. You can just find a picture of her alone, which is now Venus or Serena, because my head's now swimming, and then you'll see how crazy strong she looks.
So, just Google him, right, Chris?
And just it's all there is, or look at the actual event that we recorded. Anyway, she does the Viking scream at the end, and I'm saying whether it's sacking the quarterback or scoring a touchdown or dunking a basketball, there's a new thing where they go, ah, that they didn't do that before. They would celebrate, but they wouldn't do the crazy Comanche Banshee scream into the heavens.
Yeah, I just assumed that was the loser. Oh, look at that.
Yeah, she's built. That is now
it's Serena.
Serena is the one that does the crazy. No, the winner does the scream.
That's even more
thoughts,
terrifying.
Brian,
on the winner doing the scream.
Yes.
Okay, I haven't seen the clip, but I wonder if it's, like I said, because the crowd is in there.
I'm talking about globally. I'm trying to float an idea here, which is everyone screams when they do the sack now. Can we sign off on that?
Can we find a video of Kevin Garnett from 1995 doing the scream when he does a block?
All right, let's move on. Let's move on to the next thing. That's fine. It's an old thing. All right, it's an old thing. All right, let me hit, let's talk to, who do we got calling in from SoFi?
Mike, I'm getting him on the line now.
So this guy, sorry, audience and Brian, I didn't mean it doesn't exist and it was never done before. I'm saying the comedy premise that I'm trying to float is that it's routinely now with men and with women and with all different sports, this crazy scream after a goal is scored or a basketball is dunked or a tennis ball is hit. That is my general premise.
The fact that it's seeped into women's sports is probably a newer thing that I've never observed before.
And it's seeped into men's sports, too, in that everyone screams like a maniac now after sacking the quarterback, which is not something that formerly existed.
How long we do with dignity? We do it quietly and just kind of, you know, take the sign of the cross.
All right. What are we doing now, Max Spada?
Rich man, poor man.
Okay. Let's see what I got here. You guys got a few? We have an intro here?
Yeah, got a couple.
Rich man, poor man.
All right, we got a few oldies but goodies, and actually some of them are ones I kind of forgot about that are good. I like the esoteric ones. Lives by a fountain.
Mm-hmm.
I like that one.
The homeless guy who's in the public square.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Only feeds his dog people food. That's, you know, filet mignon or whatever on the street.
Side of the road.
I don't know why I'm in love with this one. Doesn't own a ladder.
Right. Either he doesn't have a house or other people own ladders and they come to
the
work.
You hire the guy with the ladder.
He's got the rack and he brings it in and he does the tree pruning, but you don't have that ladder. Your car is worth more than your house, which is true in that I guarantee that Leno has a McLaren F1 that is worth more than his house, as much as his house mm-hmm. is mm-hmm. worth.
His car is worth more than his dwelling, which is right. He doesn't own.
Let's see. Oh, I always like this one. You've built your own podcast studio.
Well done.
And one of my all-time perennial favorites is lives next door to a rapper. Those are the perennials. Some of the more recent ones here are, as we mentioned, multiple dwellings on a single piece of property. And let's see, one that Mike likes, planes take off near your house, live super close to an airport, or have a private runway.
That's some very expensive real estate underneath Santa Monica, underneath literally, but like under the flight path of Santa Monica Airport.
Do you guys have any rich man, poor mans?
Yeah, I think we have a couple. Here's one that I'm particularly fond of. I really hope it hasn't been done before. Lives with a doorman.
Oh, yeah. No, that's good. because
either you're in a building with a doorman or your husband's a doorman and he comes.
That is the that's the female equivalent to has sex with a maid.
Oh, sure.
Which is that's Arnold Schwarzenegger banging his maid, or it's the maid's actual the maid's husband back in the apartment. So that we have a couple now. We have the doorman and the maid. One of the perennials that I forgot about was sheets over your furniture. So,
oh, like if you're wintering somewhere.
And my mom, of course, famously would take sofas off the street and then put sheets over them as her way of upholstering them versus the Hamptons house that, you know, it's quiet for the winter.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Adam, here's one you can identify with. Rich man, poor man, doesn't answer his own phone. Either you got your assistant doing it because you're a rich guy, or you're a poor man dodging creditors at every turn. You don't want to answer your phone.
Good.
Yeah, I like that. How about this one? Fasting. Mm. Either you're on a very expensive cleanse or you can't afford a couple of meals today.
Yeah, that's true. And that's kind of rich man, poor man. Like, that's not so much homeless L.A. poor. That's more like Africa drought poor. Yeah,
sure.
Right?
Sure.
Well, check this one out. You have a lot of furniture made of reclaimed wood. Either you pay $10,000 for that very fancy table at a boutique, or you literally just got some driftwood in your poor
man. You're a castaway.
You made something out of it.
Another one out of the oldie but goodie, but I do like this one. If someone is trying to find you, somebody else says, I think he's in his trailer.
Oh, yeah. That was a good one.
Yeah. I always love that
Charlotte one. Or the guy who lives in a trailer. I got one more for you.
Yes.
Well, this one more favorite. Getting famous from a charity event. So you're either throwing a big gala or it's for you because you have nothing.
Hannah, unless Brian's got another one, Hannah 29 from Cincinnati has one. And Brian, if you got one, save it for after Hannah.
Okay.
Hannah, 29, Cincinnati.
Hey, how are you guys doing?
Good. How are you doing?
Good. I've got a good rich man, poor man for you. How about smoking indoors?
I
figure you're in your cigar room or on your Craigslist couch and you're double wide.
Yeah, it isn't. It works if you think about what the middle class doesn't really do anymore. You know what I mean? Dawson, sure. You got one.
Spends zero time paying bills.
Mm. Yeah, that's true. That's very true. You have money manager do it. Is our caller still up there? Did we pop her down? You can probably leave her up.
This is probably LA specific, but rich man, poor man, no street cleaning where you live.
Yeah.
Adam, is there street cleaning on your street?
It's funny because they do have the sweeper that goes by.
I mentioned cleaning signs, you know what I mean? Like
on occasion, but there is no sign.
Yeah.
There's no sign, no enforcement of a sign. Hey, Hannah.
Yes.
What are you doing in Cincinnati?
I'm still working from home down here, so spending a lot of time in my 600 square foot apartment.
How much is a 600 square foot apartment in Cincinnati?
So I actually live right downtown next to the unused football and red stadiums, and it's about $1,600 a month.
So it's been kind of pretty gentrified down there.
Yeah, very much so.
And what business are you in that you can't go back to it?
So I work in sales forecasting for a consumer goods company, and they just said, hey, you can do it from home, might as well not take the risk. So we're all home until the end of the year.
Yeah, I bet everyone else is back at the office and somebody just made the decree, let's just keep the pains in the ass at home and then we'll tell everybody.
I actually started in March and have never been to my office, so they just probably decided not to set me up and keep her at home.
Is it a very, very large consumer goods company?
Yes, very much so.
Is it P&G?
No.
Oh, it's not. Okay.
Not that one. But Cincinnati, you're right on.
No, that's Procter & Gamble's in Cincinnati.
Yeah, they're in Cincinnati. The odds.
Yeah.
Thanks. Hang on. And thanks. And we got one more, and then we'll talk to Mike, whose real name isn't Mike, but Mike is sort of a person that knows everything about what's going on at SoFi Stadium, our $5 billion Rams and Rams and Chargers, I should say, team. And I want to know what's going on over there and all the ins and outs and how deep it is and how high it is and all that good stuff. Let me talk to Joe from Seattle. You got a rich man, poor man?
Three times, I think.
Oh, well.
Yeah,
sorry, I was trying to play a safe drop for the show as a joke, and I hit the wrong button. Yeah. Hi, guys. Hi, everybody.
Hi, guy. What do you got?
Hi, guy. Real quick, I just want to say, Gina, thank you for being brave enough to share about what's been going on with your dad recently. I know that must have been difficult to open up to, and I'm sure you're just getting lots of messages of support and everything, but I hope that helps.
That really means a lot. I've been completely inundated with lovely messages, and I cannot tell you how much that means, and I really appreciate that. Thank you.
Oh, that's because, I mean, I don't really know what it's like being a public figure where if you open up to something like that, like, I assume you always have, like, the support of your friends, like regular people do, but, like the people, you know, the large numbers of the public that really, they feel like they know you and they really like you, but it's a large amount of short messages, and, I mean, I don't know anything about how that, I just hope that helps as well. And I mean,
and
Brian,
a lot of listeners too, saying, right? Hey, pulling for you, so thank you very much.
Okay, good. So I was thinking of a variation on rich poor man, something that, what? Still there?
Yes, mm-hmm. Joe.
Go ahead.
Oh, okay. Rich restaurant, poor restaurant. I've noticed some of these, like, stack of paper towels in the men's room. Like, the poor places just have the paper towels they left out, and the nice places they have, like, a wicker basket with a stack of paper towels. All the in-between ones just have, like, a hand dryer or a regular dispenser.
That's not bad. That's good, because it's, like, monogrammed, thick, like, paper, like, cloth, right. Essentially.
Yeah.
Also, the poor ones, lots of signs about don't take those paper towels and try to flush them. I would argue that if you don't want those paper towels thrown in the toilet, get them the hell out of the bathroom. I feel like that is just an accident waiting to happen.
You'd be terrible with a tampon dispenser.
Yeah, you're tempting fate.
My God, I'd probably lose an eye.
Or how about
you do it like
one?
A t-shirt can.
Diet Coke only available in an unrefrigerated can.
Yeah, maybe. And not too bad, Joe, but keep working on them.
Well, those, I mean, the poor places, they just don't bother. The richer restaurants, it's like it's beneath them to have things like soft drinks. And it's like if you are not drinking and you just want a Diet Coke, they're like, okay, we'll see if we can find the one we use for the rum and Coke. It's just a room temperature can.
Maybe. I don't know. I like that you're burning calories. I like where your head's at. I'm picturing saying it up on stage. You know, there is a test when I will do this on stage at a comedy club, and some of this stuff gets a big laugh. Some of it gets a delayed laugh, like, mm-hmm. You know,
you think about it. Yeah.
Sex near a fountain. You know, like that kind of stuff. Like they have to think about it for a second. I'm not sure that room temperature Diet Coke would get a huge reaction from the crowd.
But we love you.
Mm, that's true.
But we love you.
Love where your head's at.
All right. Mike is representing SoFi Stadium. So think of your questions because I guess it's the Rams Chargers $5 billion. Is it $5 billion, Mike?
Hey, man.
Is it $5 billion the cost?
I think it's actually going a little over that now.
Really? And have you been there since they broke ground?
No, I've actually only been there for about 2 years.
And you've been, I know you don't want to reveal too much about your jobs and your status, but it's fair to say that you know all the inner workings over there?
Yeah, at least a good fair amount.
So what do we know about reopening or opening at all? As a matter of fact, that stadium's not going to reopen. It's just going to open because it's never been before this season. Also, how comical is it that you guys probably had a full bum rush to try to finish everything? Like, we got to get those bathrooms working on the loge deck before 80,000 fans hit this place starting, you know, September, whatever, and the crowd never showed up. Was there a lot of that?
Oh, yeah. I'd say, at least for me, I'm not 100% sure about some of the people out here, but for me, I was working 12 to 16-hour days for a good 4 months.
And in anticipation of the kickoff and wanting to have all the things up and running, functioning, I mean, think about all the bathrooms and all the concession stands and everything that needs to work, right? Turnstiles and everything.
Exactly. They wanted it 100%, and they kept giving out dates. Oh, here's your date. You have to hit this 100% by then. And they were pushing an insanely short schedule on everybody that I don't think anybody was going to hit anyways. A lot of it ties back into coronavirus.
And wasn't Taylor Swift concert supposed to open the stadium, supposed to christen the stadium?
Yeah, it was supposed to be Taylor Swift was supposed to open it towards the end of June. There's no way that concert would have happened with the with all the delays that were out there.
Right.
This is a very LA question, but what's the parking situation? Did they ever figure out the mass transit? Because the at one point the metro or the rail wasn't going near the stadium. Did they fix that? Is there parking? How much parking? What is the status?
Well, as far as any kind of public transit goes, I have no idea. But the parking situation right now, they just have this vast area of just flat parking and a couple of parking structures that are still in the process of being built. But this is all going to tie into the new Clippers Stadium, which is actually going in the same location.
Oh, and they've not done any work on that yet?
No, I think I saw them doing the groundbreaking ceremony probably about a month ago. But yeah, the work's been held on that to try to finish some of the other projects. They have this big retail shopping center that's going to go in, a couple of big parking structures, and the NFL is going to actually have an office out there.
How many stories below the surface is it? Is it 10 stories down just below the parking lot? Like if I was standing in the parking lot, how far below would the playing field be?
So the stadium's 8 floors tall, but each floor is not exactly like your typical 20-25 foot floors. Some of them are upwards of 60 feet tall. And the ground level is actually on level 6, so it's about 6 floors underground.
Wow. So it's about 6, as we know, like a 6-story building, like a traditional 6-story?
Yeah, it's probably more like about 10. I'd say 9 to 10 floors underground, and that's where the actual field is.
Right, wow. So it's almost, you know, like 100 feet down below the parking lot, and then... do they have any inside information about when they might start letting a percentage? What's the capacity? Forget about the luxury boxes, but what does that stadium hold?
So there's actually two different seating arrangements. They have their standard for like NFL games. That's about 70,000, I think, is the number, but it's also expandable for concerts. They can get it upwards of 100 plus.
So like let's say if Loxy and Dawson's band got together and wanted to play that place, they could spread it out a little bit.
Yeah, I think they can handle that crowd that they're gonna draw.
So it's about 70. Any thoughts on a percentage in the stadium of reopening, like some of these other places are doing 25% or some version of that? Is there anything in the future? Is there any information you know that we don't?
The only thing that I've heard is it's going to kind of tie into what Los Angeles is doing, you know, as a city, as a county, whether they're going to let, you know, open seating or seating to a limited number of people. That'll kind of be dictated by L.A.
Is it technically considered an open air stadium, or
should
it
be, right?
Yeah, what's the designation? Because I know it has a roof.
Yeah, it's open air. It does have a roof, but the roof doesn't actually come all the way down. It's not a dome. It is open air. But I don't quite know the designation. I've heard them call it open air.
What happens if there's a rainstorm during the game? Like if the field would be dry, would all of the bleachers be dry as well? I guess you'd be the ultimate dry because everyone would be at home and not there. But would it, how you know, it's like Texas Stadium had that weird design for all those years, which was just like a partial dome, but the field was always open. So,
with the roof, yeah, the skylight.
It was like a giant skylight that was the size of the football field. So if it would rain, the players would all get wet, but if you were up in the stands, you wouldn't get wet, which is kind of an interesting it was interesting. It was sort of like those, you know, there's an interesting parallel here, which is the old chauffeured 1920s, 1930s limousines were covered in the back, yep, but the driver was open.
Because so screw him.
It was like, these guys are the worker bees. You guys can get wet. We're the fat cats who paid a lot for tickets. We're going to sit in the dry. It was interesting. It made it iconic. But, Mike, how does that work at SoFi?
Yeah, so SoFi will be completely closed. None of the seating will get wet. The field won't get wet. They do have these giant openings that they can slide open to kind of let more air in or ambient light, I guess.
Does the roof move at all? You just said there's giant openings that can kind of shift things around. Like some domes are kind of retractable. Some do lots of different kind of clamshell things. Is there any movement in that roof system?
No, just those openings. I'd say they're about 50 foot by 50 foot, and they can slide those open. There's about, I'd say, six of them, I think.
Do we have any prices on season tickets or luxury boxes? I mean, I know everything varies, but I just mean, I could imagine a luxury box would be insanely expensive.
That's exactly what I was going to ask about, because those boxes are getting a lot of attention, you know, in the state of the art department, especially, you know, having the bathrooms in the suite, right?
Oh, yeah. Bathrooms in every suite, touchscreen stuff. You can control what's going on the TV, sound, lighting, all that. As far as pricing goes, I do know that they are only leasing the suites out, and it was $2.5 million for 2 years.
Jesus Christ.
All righty, then.
Can you sleep there?
I have to.
I mean, what if I slept in the bathroom?
Yeah.
I mean,
I don't... Sort of the cleaning people, I don't think you ever know that you're in there.
Listen, let me tell you something about cleaning people. If you've got an extra $100 in your pocket that you're not married to, those guys are perfectly willing to look the other way.
Oh, yeah, when the toilet paper shortage happened, they had the cleaning people out there, and I was able to pick up a case of 65 rolls for $100 when couldn't buy any.
Yeah, sweet.
Smart.
Hey, Mike, so... your best guess, when were they going to start letting people into that stadium?
Best guess. I know that they went ahead and announced that it wouldn't be in 2020. So if it was, I'd say maybe late season, you know, January, February 2021.
Oh, so they made the announcement that there shall be zero audience occupancy, even though it's technically outdoor. I mean, it's an open stadium. No occupancy until in this year.
Yeah, that was the last information that I got passed down to me.
Wow, is that?
I would take the under on that, because they announced, I think today, that a number of teams in other markets, of course, who allowed some fans in, are allowing an increase in fans. So it feels like, barring some sort of crazy surge, the ball's rolling that way.
No, that's my hope. I would love to see people in it, but. Yeah, it's just the last information that they passed down to me. I'm sure there's their own conversation going about it. And again, like I said, it all kind of ties into what LA is doing.
Is this information sensitive? Do you know it, or has this been put out there for the public? Because I hadn't heard that.
Yeah, I have no idea if that was actually announced, but that was the information that was passed along in the trades.
I'll tell you thank you, Mike. I appreciate the info, and we'll get an update for you as it makes sense. The part about all this stuff, which is, maybe we're not going to open the schools till after the elections, or we're not going to open the stadium till after the first of the year. I don't know. Wait and see how things are going. Maybe
can we evaluate?
Maybe we could evaluate in a few weeks, and it would be safe for, I don't know, 20% occupancy. How about that? Like, maybe things seem to be heading the right direction. Maybe it'll be okay to let a few people in there in December.
You know what it kind of feels like? You know, if a kid asks you over and over again, yes. like, can we go? Can we go? And you go, we'll see. We'll see. No, when are we going to go? Fine. After Christmas, okay?
Right.
Are you happy now? Are you glad you asked?
Yes, again, it's another 5 months.
That's what they're doing to us.
And then, because other stadiums are just bound to to start slowly letting people creep in. And then if things seem to be okay in those stadiums, then why wouldn't we just go, all right, we'll do that.
Yeah, yes. I think the cities just have so much to do with it, and we have to rely on L.A.
No, I understand that we are the safest, biggest fucking pussies in the land. But what I'm saying is why? Why does that need to be a decree? Why do you need to be extra this way or extra that way? Like, why not we just go, we'll see what the science says. We'll check the chart. We'll see how the infections are or the death rate, or we'll see which way the ticker's ticking, and we'll do it based on that. So
that still allows you to say no.
Right. Well, check back with me in 2 weeks. And if the death toll's still going up or the hospitals are still getting crowded or whatever that thing is, then we'll go, no, it's not safe enough yet. Or, hey, good news, which would be nice, too. You can't just go, no, we'll see you in 2021. And I'll bet you we got to look into it. But I'll bet you a lot of these other stadiums are just going to slowly start whatever. And then we'll be here being punished for being the safest people alive.
I saw a story today on Twitter. There was certain stadiums that allowed 2,000 fans, you know, the first week, are going to allow 7,000 fans this week. You know what I mean? Like that kind of thing. It's, the ball's rolling. It's barring a crazy event, it's inevitable.
Well, I don't know. It doesn't seem more inherently dangerous than many other out. I mean, all that restaurants are open and they're dining out in the parking lot and everyone's just sitting around for a couple hours having a meal. What is so vastly different about spreading apart in a stadium? But all right. And in football, there's no home runs, because in baseball, you try it and then there'd be a home run and 18 drunken people would all be running toward the ball in the bleacher and probably give each other AIDS and crabs at that point. All right. Let's see. Oh God. What was I thinking about? What was I thinking about, Max Pana?
Oh, man.
I got a lot on my mind.
Probably the Nashville thing. There's a lot of some stuff going on in Nashville.
Nashville was trending. That was interesting because I just got back from Nashville. All right, I'll tell you about that in a second. First, I'll tell you about Liquid IV. I love this Liquid IV. I tell you, I travel with Liquid IV, especially, like I said, late nights, having a couple cocktails after the show, early morning. Meet in the lobby at, I think we met at 6:30 in the morning, poured myself Liquid IV. You just throw the packs in your toiletry bag, throw it in the water bottle, shake it up. They also just launched an energy multiplier as well. So that nice clean caffeine, lots of energy without the crash. So you can either go the energy multiplier or you go both in the Liquid IV as well. Replenishes and rehydrates. Delicious. It's good tasting, a lot of energy, long lasting. I go with the traditional lemon flavor just because I'm old school that way. Liquid IV cellular transport technology delivers optimal ratio of nutrients for rapid absorption and lasting energy. It's like a Liquid IV, right, Dawson?
Liquid IV is available nationwide at Costco, where you can get 25% off when you go to liquidiv.com and use code Adam at checkout. That's 25% off anything you order when you use promo code Adam at liquidiv.com. Start fueling your adventures today at liquidiv.com. Promo code Adam.
Oh, I know what I was thinking about. So, Maxipata, I gave you a picture of a car and a roll bar. And the reason I did that, and we'll put the picture up on adamcarolla.com. It's not that exciting, but I just did it for a reason, which is I'm constantly telling everyone, yeah, I've been flying. Yeah, I've been traveling. Yeah, I've been staying at hotels. Yeah, I've been going to nightclubs. Yeah, I've been out and about. Like, I'm doing my thing. And then everyone kind of goes, oh, you're playing fast and loose with danger. Like you're taking a chance. You're being one of those people that throwing caution to the wind. And I was thinking about it. And I thought, no, I don't feel that way. I feel like I'm assessing things and then sort of going about about my life. And the reason I'm telling about this picture of this roll bar, Max Zapata, and the reason I bring it up, and it looks stupid, but it's a picture of the car I just raced. I just raced this car. The roll bar is a side impact. The roll bar has rollover protection. It's also side impact protection. And this particular car had one bar going from the back down to the front, low, with a very minimal amount of side impact protection. Like if somebody hits you hard on the side, you're going to definitely break your femur or your hip or whatever it is.
Why is it so low?
Well, what you're looking at is an X. Now, yeah. The first one was just low because they didn't really care about safety in the 70s. Okay. And you just get in and out of the car and it was lighter. I walked over to my guy, Sean, and I said, make an X. Put an upper bar and a lower bar. Don't just have the one bar going right to left down to the bottom.
Is that standard for this kind of thing, or did you want that sort of custom?
There are versions where there's three bars.
I mean just for racing.
There are versions where there's a lot, and there's versions where there's none. But what I'm saying is I, the guy who, by some accounts, doesn't have any fear, I said to my guy, I'm going to go race this car again in December. I don't think there's a proper amount of side impact protection. I want you to go get some chromoly tubing and give me more side impact protection, meaning I do have a gear for safety. I measured. So I don't go
like a fear-based life now.
Right. I don't go all in or all out. I do realize that I'm walking on the beach without a mask. I have no fear for that. I've measured that. I've also conversely realized I do not have enough side impact protection on my race car. And so I added to that. So it's sort of saying, well, are you fear-based? Are you safety-based? Or do you just let it fly and throw caution to the wind? And the answer is kind of case by case. That's
you did what any person should do, and not necessarily a racer, but like you assessed the risk and you took what you thought was the appropriate action. Like you ever see those people who are just afraid of dogs, whatever dog it is, they're just afraid of dogs. And if like a little, like, you know, 12 pounder starts barking, yip, 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 the person's like backing away. I'm sorry, I'm afraid of dogs. I had a bad experience. All right, well, this dog is not to be afraid of. I understand being afraid of certain dogs. Some dogs are scary, but let's assess the risk.
Perfect example of the people where, you know, Molly would just come flopping down the hall with the tail wagging, and they'd go, I'm sorry, could you put your dog away? And then they tell you they're afraid of dogs, and then they would explain that they got bit when they were 9.
Yeah, something happened.
Then I would go get over it and go ahead and assess the type of dog that's running. If the tail's wagging and the dog's slobbering, then or it's just yip, yip, yipping, and it's 12 pounds, then don't worry about it. All right. Let's see. Our guys, Kevin Harrington and Mark Tim, are on hold. We'll take a quick break and we'll talk all about entrepreneurialism and business and mentorship. And we'll do that right after this.
It's time to check Adam's voicemail.
Hey, I was going to say things that have gone the way of the dodo. I'm sure you remember back in the day, the white vans with the speakers. The guys would pull up and try to sell you speakers out of the van. Wanted to get your take on that. All right. Have a good day.
You can leave us a message at 888-634-1744.
We got Kevin Harrington. We got Mark Tim here. Kevin was one of the original members of Shark Tank as well, and we'll tell you about Mark as well. They have a book, Mentor to Millions, Secrets of Success in Business, Relationships, and Beyond. You can pre-order it now. It's available coming up this Tuesday on Amazon. Good to see you guys.
Great to be here.
Good to see you again, Kevin.
Yeah, thank you. Great to be back.
Yeah, mentorship. Oh, my God. Where are the mentors? And I now realize, like, what a big deal. I was thinking about you guys coming on, and I was thinking about mentors like me. And I'm thinking, I didn't really have any mentors. And then my first mentor was younger than I was, which was Jimmy Kimmel. Like, everyone thinks of a mentor as like the old guy who's going to tell the young guy. Your mentor can be younger than you quite easily. Jimmy was 26 when I met him. I was just turning 30 and he mentored me.
Hey, absolutely. You know what's great, Adam? You mentioned Shark Tank. You know, people come on Shark Tank for two reasons. One, they want money, but oftentimes we find out they really want that mentorship and that connection to the shark and the doors that the shark can open for them. And yes, I mean, I've had mentors younger than me. I mean, in the world of that I started, the As Seen on TV space, it's now morphed into a digital marketplace. The gurus in digital are in their 20s, the mid-20s. By the time they get to their 30s, they may be too old. We've had a lot of young digital gurus mentoring myself and our entities over the last couple of years, too.
Kevin worked with the legendary Billy Mays back in the day.
Oh, yeah.
Of course, Tony Technique Little.
On the gazelle
you
with
can
the ponies.
Do
head.
It.
He's on the
you
gazelle with the ponies.
Yes, and now I'm thinking about the story you told on Take a Knee. I believe of like meeting a young Kim Kardashian.
Yes,
I did. Yeah, tell us that story because I found that story interesting.
Well, so back in the early '90s, got a call from Kris Jenner. And she said, hey, I'm following all these fitness shows you're doing. You know, we were doing Tony Little and many others, Corey Everson, if you remember Corey back in the day, but a lot of cool fitness stuff. She said, you know, I'd like to do fitness. And so we did fitness with the Jenners and we had big success. The first product we did was a stair climbing thing that just had these little pistons and it sat on the floor mm-hmm. and it would go up and down for $99. And it was huge. We did hundreds of millions of dollars on that product. And we did another show and another show. And so when Kim was just starting, she was actually a pal hanging around with Paris Hilton and they were off running around all over the place. Kris Jenner called me and said, hey, Kim's over in Miami. She's would love to, you know, get some projects. She's been pitching a TV show out in LA, but until that comes through, if it ever does, could you please give her some things to do? So she had not started Keep Up with the Kardashians yet, but they got that deal very shortly thereafter because she told me she was dealing with all the powers to be there. And so make a long story short, she came over and we're like, okay, Kim, what do you want to do? And she's, I'll do anything. Cause she was in prior to that. I don't know if you remember Adam, but she had her store Dash out in Calabasas and she was a closet organizer. Okay. So she was cleaning and organizing Paris Hilton's closet and celebrities' closets. That was what one of her business efforts before Keeping Up with the Kardashians. So we gave her a steam iron to sell and we kind of moved her around and shot a lot of great footage and some of her stuff actually did end up working. Okay. It was never the big hit that Tony Little and Jack LaLanne and Billy Mays had, but Kim had a knack for kind of pitching, you know? You know, make a long story short, a couple weeks later, I think she got her deal done with the Keeping Up with the Kardashians show. And it took off like crazy for all of them.
Hey, kids, if you're listening, you just Google in old Kim Kardashian videos and see some of her old work. So that's up there on the internet.
Through, yeah.
Yeah. Do it on daddy. Do it on daddy's computer in case you got the parental control block on there. And Mark, let's brag about you for a bit, and then we'll get into the broader subject. What is your background?
My background, I'm a serial entrepreneur. You know, I got into being an entrepreneur to be the father, the husband that I thought I was put on this earth to be. And all I really did is create more work for myself than I have when I was in corporate America. But along the way, I figured it out. I figured out that I was CEO of the most valuable business in the world. That happens to be my family. I started running my family like a business. You can actually look up on the Indiana Register and see 2B Tims LLC. My youngest child has the same shares that I do. I started taking everything I learned from Kevin, from Zig Ziglar, from all my mentors, bringing them home, bringing them my best and my first instead of my last and my least. And then from that point, man, the results have been extraordinary. I've now got young adult children that took the lessons from their father, the entrepreneur, and then now they're deploying them in the real world. And so I love business, I love family, and I love the integration that's possible if you integrate.
Yeah, well, then we're going right from the Kardashians to this concept. But what is the concept of the family as a business or business as a family?
Yeah, the concept is that if you're good in business, see, there's so many people out there that win in business and lose at home. They crush it in the work they do and they get crushed at home. And so my philosophy is if you're good at business, anything in business, I don't care what it is, you can be that good at home. And most people desire to be that good at home. They just aren't. And so the book we wrote, Mentor to Millions, starts out with me at the beginning of my driveway and I don't want to go home. And the reasons to not want to go home are you filed bankruptcy, you screwed everything up, and you're embarrassed. I didn't want to go home because I just had one of the coolest days of my life. I made every decision with confidence. I had one of the biggest sales of my life. I didn't want to go home because I didn't want the feeling to end. And so what it means by having your family as a business, it means that the most valuable business that you will ever own, ever operate, ever even be a part of, maybe the one you're going home to, not the one you went to. And if you start treating it that way and you start taking the things you're good at in business and applying them to your family, the results that you get at home can be measured in extraordinary kind of results instead of dollars and cents. And so that's what it means to have your family. I mean, my family has a family logo. We got a family mission statement. I mean, one of the coolest things we ever did was go on 99 designs for $99. And we had 185 designers competing to give my family their family logo. I mean, my family still talks about that. My kids still talk about it. They're sending it out their aunts, their uncles, their cousins. They're voting on it. You know, when it was done, they were so freaking proud of this logo. They wanted to put it on hats and shirts and everything.
You hear that, Adam? Family logo. Hold it together.
You lost, Adam. Wait till one of your kids goes down the hall to HR. Be like, Daddy was drunk again. So... This isn't well. So I wish more people kind of understood this concept, which is, it. I mean, look no further than the Kardashians. But what I'm saying is I went out today, and my kids are doing the, you know, Zoom virtual home school whatever crap we're doing here in LA, and I knew that I was going to Ben Shapiro's outfit, the Daily Wire, you know, before they moved to Nashville, and they were going to do a feature on me. So my son likes Ben Shapiro and likes the Daily Wire. So I said, "You should come with me." So I'm gonna pick you up at school early, which means pull you out of your bedroom at 11, and you come with me. And he came with me. And somebody showed him around, you know, and he sat there while we did the interview and then like a photo shoot and showed him this room and that room. And it's a real operation and he can see what's going on. And then when we're leaving and we're like getting in the elevator, I said, you know, maybe this will give you some ideas about starting your own business or having your own outlet or media company. And he said, well, maybe I can intern here. And I said, well, they're moving to Nashville, but I'll ask your mom. But he was like, but I want to intern at one of these places. And I thought, good, because the sooner this guy starts being successful, the easier it's going to be on me. And versus the other, well, what's the other version? He becomes a junkie and he's in and out of rehab and he's you know, crashing on your sofa and he's uninsured.
Let me go one step further, Adam. Okay, so when I say I incorporated my family, like my wife and I sat down, we came up with all the expenses we were paying for our kids, every dime that we spent on clothes, food, everything. We divided it up and said, this is how much we spent on each of these kids. And then the family business, okay, put them on salary, gave them a debit card, and we're out. Like they got to pay for everything. And if they spent all their money in the first 5 days of the month, it was a long freaking month. I mean, wow. They were broke. And so they made so many mistakes But they made so many mistakes under my roof, under my watch, and I was able to – these helicopter parents that don't let their kids make mistakes, they're failing their kids. Give them the money you're spending on them and say, you see how it works out there. I got to go from saying no a million times to saying yes every time. Oh, you want to buy a custom pair of Nikes with your name on it? Sure. Now you're broke. Okay. What? Now all of a sudden it's like that custom pair of Nikes doesn't mean squat because they can't go out with their friends. They can't do anything. And so we took what we did in business that worked and we brought it home to our family. And now I can tell you, my kids, my young adult kids in their early 20s have savings accounts that would make some adults blush because they learned it under my roof and they failed under my roof and they got it figured out under my roof. And now they're crushing it out there. And it's not because of daddy's money. It's because they learned the value of money, the value of hard work, the value of responsibility inside of a family business.
Mark, I don't know if there's a trash can nearby, but if there's a trash can where you're in your office, in your home somewhere, just pull it up because you're going to need something to vomit into when I tell you this next story. We started off as a positive dad story. Let me tell you a negative dad story in terms of the home and the business. I was flying from Nashville yesterday and I was like on the plane, restless, like eyes closed, but thinking, like head moving, got up early in the morning, but couldn't fall asleep, you know, on my back. And before I left, my wife said to me, you going back out of town? Like, when's a good day to get the maids over here? And the reason we do that is because I'm gone all the time, but oftentimes the maids show up like the one morning I'm at home, and then it's got to open the door and they're coming through and you got to, they're in the kitchen. And by the way, here we have the Mexican maids and you always scare them. Like, they'll be in the kitchen and you'll turn the corner in your bathrobe and they'll go, hi! And I'm like, okay, you're in someone's house. Don't be surprised when someone turns a corner. But so I was saying, I said, I don't know, I'm going back out of town to Phoenix on Monday, on Friday. Maybe they should come on Friday. Anyway, flying home, and I'm in my airplane seat, and I'm thinking to myself, we have a full-time nanny. Our kids are teenagers. My wife doesn't really have a job. What if we cleaned our own house? What if the kids just clean their room and then you, wife, you clean the bedroom and then I'll clean my office and my bathroom and then this full-time nanny we have and you as a very part-time worker, you guys could handle the rest of the house. What if?
Okay. Are you kidding?
What
me?
If we did that? And I was like sitting in my seat, like smiling and fantasizing, and a musical montage about people cleaning, you know, and cleaning their own rooms and cleaning their own houses.
Utopia.
Yeah, it's just like it had nothing to do with money savings. It was just like, why do we have these poor beleaguered women come into our house? Why not? We'll just clean our own house. We just clean our own house. We have a full-time nanny. There's a woman. She's good at cleaning. The kids she's nannying are teenagers. What do we need her for? Let's have her clean. And so I walked into the kitchen when I got off the flight, and there was Olga, the nanny, in the kitchen. And I had a little spring in my step, and I said, Olga, I got a plan. What if, just hear me out. What if we just clean this house? Just us. Just we would do it. Like me and you, I'll clean my room. The kids clean your room. Lynette will clean the bedroom. You guys will just clean the house. We'll just do it together. And she went, Adam, you know that's never going to work. And I went, all right, fuck it. I'm having a drink. And I went to fucking den and shut the door. But I did have a fantasy, a fleeting fantasy about our family cleaning their own house.
Your business is in the red, Adam.
You need a consultant to come in about a reorg. Yeah.
I needed a mentor.
You needed a mentor.
Amen. Mark could have helped you close the deal.
Because what she did is she looked at me and she went, Adam, you know these people, right? You live with these people. I'm like, yeah. But what if we did it? What if we told them to do it? She's like, it's never going to work.
It was the end of Chinatown. Forget it, Jake.
Yeah, I said, you know, I'm tapping out. You're right. I'm going to my messy office and closing the door. I needed Mrs. Clean over there, or I don't know who
Pine Sol lady,
the Pine Sol lady. But yeah, so mentorship. How do people? You know, we throw around this word mentor all the time, and there's a kind of inner city, you know, no nonsense ex-cop who's now teaching the young kids to box. You know, there's like that kind of mentor. And then there's the businessy mentor, the school kind of the mentor. But we kind of use it almost like we just kind of trot it out and go, these kids need more mentors. And then we leave. Mm-hmm. And I know there's some programs and stuff like that, but I just mean, it's such a huge part of our society. It could be such a huge part and make such a massive difference between somebody not finding success and maybe finding drugs in prison and everything else, and then that same person finding incredible success. I don't know. Is there a national movement afoot? And if not, why don't we start it?
You know, Adam, I think you hit the nail on the head. People, they know and they hear about it, but they just don't take action. And Mark has a great way of explaining it. When you say, how do you get a mentor? You first have to put your hand up and say, I need help. And some people just, they just don't know where to go, what to do, how to do it, how to engage with folks. But hey, at the same time, like I said, from Shark Tank, these folks come in, they're ready to go. These are the highest motivated people because they want money, but they also want the mentorship of that shark. In fact, one of the crazy things that I found was happening from Shark Tank, I would go out and we would take the pitches and, you know, you can't do every deal. I did dozens of deals, but I did many dozens of deals that I didn't do. But the folks that I wouldn't do a deal with, I'd get phone calls 2, 3, 4, 5 weeks later. Hey, Kevin, I know you didn't want to invest in my company, but can I count on you for some advice, for some mentoring? And would you be willing to do that? So, you know, this was the beginning of me understanding. I mean, yes, I've had mentors in my life, but people, entrepreneurs, you said it, if they want to be successful, somebody that's got a little vision, that has some relevance in their industry, can be very powerfully helping them move in the right direction. Because I've made the mistakes before. I mean, well, one of my first mentors was a finance guy that helped me raise capital and grow my business.
You know, it's an interesting thing that I don't think I say it a lot, but I really do mean it. People, whether it's Mark Garagos and it's something with the law, or Jimmy Kimmel and it's something with comedy, they love telling people, oh, here's what you got to do, or here's what I know, or here's what I've learned. And the thing that's incredible about it is the most valuable commodity there is. You know, somebody could give you $5,000, but that wouldn't mean jack squat. Somebody really knew what they were doing, telling you, hey, here's how you do it. And the thing that's crazy that I've noticed about all wildly successful guys, Mark Garagos probably charges $5,000 an hour in the billable hour department. If he comes walking into my warehouse and is standing around the lobby and one of my associates, comes up to him and goes, hey, I'm living in an apartment and the landlord says that blah, 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 he'll stop whatever he's doing and explain to them exactly what they have to do. And if they don't, and meanwhile, the guy who's getting millions of dollars in billable hours every year will happily give away all the same advice for free, just standing in a lobby. Or and then he'll say, just email me after the show. I'll have my guy. You know, these people, I've seen Jimmy do it. Anybody who asks successful people questions, A, they're flattered. B, it's their field of expertise. I do it with woodworking. I mean, my billable hours is $17 an hour. But I mean, ask me about your cove molding and I'll stop whatever I'm doing and ask and tell you all about it. Like, because you want to. It's your field of expertise. You're flattered by it. People have no idea that these people, as busy as they are, as much as they get an hour, will drop everything and tell almost anybody, here's what you have to do.
Yeah, we Kevin and I met because of a mutual mentor. So I didn't know Kevin. Kevin didn't know me, but I had a mentor by the name of Zig Ziglar. He was the father of motivational speaking, and Kevin had Zig as a mentor. So we both met each other because we had connected with the family to keep his legacy going, and the family said, you guys need to meet each other. And as it turns out, the reason that Kevin and I were so attracted to Zig is he had this quote, you can have everything in life you want. You just have to help enough other people get what they want. And that's what you're talking about. Super successful people, they know two things. Number one, they know that they got to help people and they're willing to help people. And people don't realize how willing they are to help. And number two, they aren't afraid to ask for help. You know, that's the crazy thing. That's why we wrote the book. The book is not about dollars, by the way. That millions is not dollars. That's impact. We figured out that the fastest way to impact a million people is to have mentors and to be a mentor. Every super successful person, they've got people that have helped them along the way. You had Jimmy, you know, Kevin had Zig, Kevin had lots of mentors. I had lots of mentors. Super successful people have mentors and they become a mentor. That's the exponential impact of mentorship. That's why we wrote the book.
Brian.
So that leads right into my follow-up question. And let me just say, first of all, I was really excited when you guys were coming on to talk about the book because my wife coincidentally went to high school with the Kardashians, but she's in corporate America and she is a mentor currently to 5 people officially, but to like dozens of people. She really believes in mentorship. And she still talks to her mentors, you know, from way back in the day, to your point. But my question is, if you're listening to this show, you have a successful business or you have some expertise, how does one become a mentor? Like, I have something to offer, you know, someone in my field. Is there a mechanism or some way to sort of become a mentor?
Yeah, I mean, for me, I think Adam was just saying, Garagos is in the lobby and somebody comes up and, you know, people tend to find their, you know, find mentors as they're out running around. But I think just like we said, a mentee raises his hand needing help. Mentors can kind of do the same thing, raise their hand and say they're available to help. And so, for example, I was one of the original founders of the Entrepreneurs Organization, EO, 1987, with Michael Dell and Ted Leonsis. And when you joined EO, the Entrepreneurs Organization, we actually gave you a few mentors that you would meet with on a monthly basis. And this was part of your membership. So, so entrepreneurs inside EO could raise their hand and say, I want a mentor. And then we would assign them to different the places that they had the most relevance to and where they could have the most impact. So it's, you know, I spoke at an event of about 8 months ago before COVID, and I was at the airport leaving, and this 18-year-old kid came up to me and he said, hey, I was there the whole day. I tried to get to you when you were done. You had left already, but here I am at the airport. I want 5 minutes of your time, and I'm willing to pay you $100 for that 5 minutes. And I looked at this kid.
Easiest $100 you ever made.
I couldn't take it. I'm like, oh yeah, that's amazing. I said, that's a great pitch. And I like good pitches, you know? So I said, I'll tell you what, let's go over here. We're going to spend a few minutes. And, you know, I gave him his $100 back, but it's, you know, I appreciate when people are aggressively pursue a situation. I mean, I can aggressively turn them down or just say it's not good timing right now if I'm too busy. But in many cases, you know, I have, you know, I mentored Mark and I have many, many other folks that I mentor on a regular basis. And they find, I mean, with social media and all the ways today, they find a way to get, you know, to the mentors, and mentors can do the same thing. I mean, go on LinkedIn and say, I'm available to help mentor in this particular area, and you're going to get a lot of people coming to you.
Gina?
Yeah, quick question. There are people that will reach out, say, over time. And, you know, and again, we're pretty easy to get a hold of. And I'm always very flattered and excited. But 9 times out of 10, I've noticed people kind of pitch saying, like, I'd love your advice. You've been doing this a long time and I'm very flattered and I'm very excited. And then ultimately it's, here's my demo. Can you get it to so-and-so? Or can you just hand me, who's your agent? Can I send you a cover letter? So how, instead of, and you feel a little duped and a little disappointed because you're ready to give, you know, some pearls of wisdom that you've learned along the way. Is there a way you can recommend to steer someone in the right direction when they ultimately just kind of want to circumvent some of that work?
Well, I'll say this. People call me and they say, hey, can you get me to Mark Cuban? Okay, so I'm like, you know what? No, I can, but I'm not going to. So okay? You're not,
all right, well, then let's wrap this up.
Mark's got enough deal flow. He doesn't need me giving him more deal flow, right? So, but yeah, I understand what you're saying. I actually get offended when people come to me to get to somebody else, right? That's all they want? No, come on. So, but Mark, I'll throw it back to you on the best way to answer that.
Yeah. So, I mean, at the end of the day, I'm going to take it a little bit from the mentee. So I'm going to just go ahead and say that when someone actually does genuinely come to you and want something, all right, the key is, and this is where the screw up is made. Someone actually makes it to the right place, but they're unwilling to be the best student. You want to actually get, you know, somebody awesome to mentor you. You've got to be willing to, number one, obviously be vulnerable enough to say, will you help me? But then number two, you got to be their best student. The biggest mistake people make is they make it to the right spot and then they don't take advantage of it. Right. They don't implement. They don't do something with it. I mean, if somebody came to you and said, hey, you're amazing. I've been listening to you for years. I just love everything you have to say. I need some help right now. Would you spend a few minutes kind of pouring into my life? And if they listen to you and they implement what you're saying, and then if they come back and say, hey, by the way, would you mind to share this? You're like all in.
Right.
Because they've invested, they've followed through. They're not just trying to kind of circumvent things. And so if you're listening out there and you want to get a great mentor, two things you have to do. Number one, value their time. Likely they are super valuable. When people ask me all the time, how'd you get a shark from Shark Tank to be your mentor? I said, number one, when I got my time with Kevin, I said, I'm going to value your time because your time is valuable. I'm going to make this easy for you and I'm going to be your best student. That was my pitch. Kevin's like, never heard that before. I'm in. And then I valued his time. I made it easy for him to mentor me. I implemented what he said. And guess what? Kevin started finding time for me. Okay. We started going to the golf course. We started traveling together. We started spending more time together because I made it easy. I valued his time and I became his best student. You need to find a mentor, be their best student, and then take whatever you've learned and teach it to someone else. That's the trifecta of exponential mentorship.
I'll answer your question quickly and easily as well, Gina, because I've had it happen where people have like, I'm interested in doing comedy, you know, and I went, oh, you want to write comedy? Fine. Let's meet on Saturday. Show me what you got, blah, blah, blah. And then they go, oh, this Saturday's not good. And then I go, okay, you're out. You're not into it. You're not serious about it. I'm not mad at you. You're not into it. You're saying you're into it, but you're not into it. Right. They don't, oftentimes people don't know they're not into it because they live in a society that's into it, you know? So you go, wouldn't it be awesome to be a great stand-up comedian and travel and women and money and blah, blah, blah? Or,
women.
Or you know, wouldn't it be great? Yeah, like Louis C.K. what I'm saying is no, our culture says, wouldn't it be great to be a famous fill in the blank screenwriter? So then you go, hey, you're a successful screenwriter. How about we sit down and you tell me how to be a screenwriter? And you go, okay, how about this Saturday? And they go, this Saturday's not good. What that person is saying is, I'm not interested in screenwriting. Now, I just heard it. They probably don't know it because society is making them interested in it, but they're not really interested in it. And then as far as that person goes, you don't have to be rude. You can just understand that they don't want to do it.
Right.
And it's like you go, fine, come in on Monday at 9 a.m. and we'll get started. And you're there on Monday and it's 10:15 and they're not there yet. They don't want to be it. They don't want to be there. They don't want to fill in the blank, make documentaries, do a podcast, you know, learn comedy writing. They are telling you through their actions. When that person says, you know, Gene, I want you to mentor me, and then they give you a air check and go, could you give this to the program director? They're saying, I don't want you to mentor me.
Right, right.
It's all there. All right, yes. Guys, we got to bring it home. I'll tell you guys, the book is Mentor to Millions, Secrets of Success in Business, Relationships, and Beyond. And you can pre-order it now. It's available this Tuesday on Amazon. Kevin, Mark, thank you guys for mentoring us today. Yeah. Appreciate it. And it's so true. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Adam.
Hey, thank you, Adam. Appreciate you.
We'll talk soon. Right. Yeah, it is one of those subjects of like, the most important thing you could really give anyone is mentorship, and it's free. And it's also a huge chasm between the haves and the have-nots. Like, when the haves have multiple mentors. You know what I mean? Like, you talk to Dr. Drew. You know, Sonny can talk to Dr. Drew about one thing and Mark Garagos about another thing. He's sitting at the other warehouse right now, and he's like, Ben Shapiro's coming in here, Dave Rubin's coming in here, Dennis Prager's coming in here. I'm going to talk to those guys. I'm like, go ahead. Let those guys yep. mentor you. You can get oodles of mentors when you're on the right side of the tracks. The wrong side of the tracks is you just wander around with, you know, shitty
assistants. Like you did.
Yeah, just those, you know, shitty assistant managers at fast food places yelling at you. You know, there is that world. That mentorship and that you know, we call it networking like it's a bad thing. It's not a bad thing. It's just, let me introduce you to this guy. He likes the things you like. You know what I mean? He can help you, and you can help him or her.
Yeah.
That world in the poor, downtrodden, sort of blue collary version of that world, there's nothing.
Doesn't exist.
There's nobody.
I just thought of a word, and I'm sure we could make it better, but I thought, well, have I ever done that? And I'm not really good at networking, and I don't really, it's just, I'm actually a little bit shy, and I always kind of, you know, get a little tongue-tied. And what I've done more of in my life is net stalking. So I'll see somebody's career, like usually a woman, but maybe not, you know, anyone that I admire, watch what they do and try to emulate it from afar, even if I don't know them personally.
Right. Yeah. Now, when a guy does that, he's usually masturbating near a shrub.
That's right.
Still
so stalking. So that doesn't count.
Right.
But
that's night stalking.
Yes. Stalking. I remember when I got out of high school, it was the lowest. The economy was in the shitter. There was no college. There was no jobs. I was just dying to get a job. Like, my thing when I was out of high school is like, I want a job. Like at a supermarket, on a construction site, anything. And there was just nobody was hiring, and there were no jobs. And like I said, I was wandering from supermarket to supermarket asking to be like a box boy or stocker or bagger or whatever. And of course, my family all just looked at me like, I don't know.
Good luck.
And
or not.
My mom had a friend named Bill who was like, I would liken him to R. Crumb. Like weirdo dude Bill, like just the nerdiest weird. My mom attracted all these like broken toys from the island of broken
misfit toys,
and Bill was one of them, you know. And so the closest I ever got to anything was like, Bill used to be a merchant marine, like way back in the day, like weirdo Bill, and maybe Bill could help you be a merchant marine. I was like, call Bill now. Like, I'll be a merchant marine. And it's like, no luck with Bill and the merchant marines. But I remember having that feeling of like, oh, you know somebody who used to do something? Like, maybe they could. And then it was like, nah. And then it was like, go clean up garbage on a construction site. But obviously, Sonny's situation will be quite different than that. And that's how it works, because it'll be like, oh, I know a guy named Bill, but his name is Bill Simmons, and he runs a sports network. So go over there. Just go intern over there, and then you'll have your own office in 3 years. All right. Let me hit Madison Reed over here, and then we'll get to the news. Madison Reed, Mister, that is. Well, I always tell you guys, Madison Reed makes a great hair coloring, and they made it for women, and they've done that for many years. And Lynette loves it, and Gina Grad loves it as well. And then they went, well, why don't we make the same good stuff for the fellas? And thus was born Madison Reed Mister. You take that gray and you blend it. You make it look natural. You can check out the before and after shots. They look great. No shoe polish look there, my friend. And again, you want a little more pepper and a little less salt? Madison Reed Mister makes it easy to find the color. You can match it on the website, quick and easy. Just put a little of the color gel. Once you've matched your color, they'll just send you a little kit, put the gloves on, rub it in, and then you just go ahead and work the activator through. Wait 10 minutes, rinse it out. Got a very natural look for your hair or your beard at Madison Reed Mister, right, Dawson?
Go to MadisonReedMister.com. That's MadisonReedMister.com. And use code Corolla for 10% off, plus free shipping on your first box. Again, that's code Corolla.
All right, quick break. Right back with the news right after this.